Yeah, recording.
This is Mom's Basement Podcast episode, is it 32? Or was it last week? Episode 33.
Yeah. Mom's Basement.
Rudy, do you have any more important announcements to make?
Not really. I already told Dan Marie's chat that I loved him in the last episode. So, yeah.
Has your feelings changed at all?
No, not really.
No, just still, heart still throbbing in your chest whenever his name is mentioned.
Yeah.
Do you pull up his picture in the middle of the night and
fap to it?
Yeah, I was going to say finger yourself, and then I stopped and said, maybe that's going too far.
No, I don't do that, but, he's definitely a pretty awesome dude, so.
Yes.
Any word from Callan?
No.
See how he took it?
No.
No.
Alright, so he could just be plotting.
He could be.
Yeah. I don't know that Callan was ever aware of Rudy's thing for him, even though he ended every episode asking that he have his babies. I don't think Callan actually listens to Mom's Basement Podcast. Yeah. And that's a pretty good guess, because nobody listens to Mom's Basement Podcast.
Well, the forge is going down soon, so maybe now that he doesn't have any place to troll, maybe he'll come listen to us.
Maybe.
Alright, cool. Enough side banter now. Let's
yeah.
Okay, let's see. Let's get down to what we're doing here today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, today we're going to talk about Greg Christopher's game, Oceans. We just did a playtest of it. We recorded the playtest audio, and we're going to send that along to him, but we wanted to take a little time to talk about the game and critique it. Before we do that, though, I want to remind our zero listeners that we will playtest your game if you want us to playtest your game. Just send us an email and say, dude, playtest my game, and we will playtest that fucking game.
Yep.
Our email address is momsbasementpodcast@gmail.com. And if you don't feel like writing that out down, you can also leave a comment on our blog or on our forum or wherever and say, dude, playtest my game. And we'll figure out how you get it to us then. Okay. So, Oceans. Someone want to give a synopsis of what this game is?
I'll do it here. Oceans, the RPG, is a representation of how to pull off the perfect heist while introducing emotions and drama. That's pretty much it. It's a good thing.
It's the Ocean's 11 RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, it's right there.
I didn't want to say that, because...
Right.
Right, we're going to get sued.
Yeah. That does raise some questions. I mean, he's kind of close to trademark infringement territory with the title of this game. You know, you'd almost think it was the licensed Ocean 11 RPG. But it's called Oceans. It's an RPG where you have a gang of jewel thieves or master criminals or whatever, and they try to pull off the perfect heist. Who wants to offer their thoughts about the game first? Rudy?
Well, I think it ran pretty smoothly.
Yeah, it did.
As far as gameplay. Basically, we had a lot of free role-playing scenes, and then we did some rolls, and then we went to the heist at the end. And that went pretty fucked for us.
We bungled it at the last minute, but we bungled it dramatically.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fun bungling the heist.
I did too, and I think the way that it kind of, like you said, escalated, like from one thing to the next was kind of cool. And
just to give our listeners a sense of the structure of the game, you have a pretty brief character creation section where the GM makes a blueprint of, well, it, not an actual blueprint, but it's called the blueprint, where he lays out what kind of defenses the casino or bank or, in our case,
GameStop
at mall has, and you, and what skills you're going to need in order to get to bypass those defenses, while the players make their characters. And then there's a planning phase where the characters do things to try to make pulling off the heist easier. Like, they make costumes, or they do research, or they hack into the computer system, or they, you know, cozy up to the other employees, so that on the night of the heist, which is the third stage of the game, things more smoothly. And then the heist is the heist. It's the moment when they break into the building, bank, or whatever, and they try to get into the vault and steal the shit they want to steal and get out. So, what take it bit by bit so that we can digest it. How did people feel about character creation and setting creation? You know, the creation of the blueprint for the job.
Go
ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, I was going to say that for character creation, one thing I didn't really like was the fact that you had to roll for your stats. Which kind of, because I rolled a 3 and kind of got fucked a little bit. I mean, I did okay, but, I mean, it just seems kind of weird to do that, to do it that way, especially since the game seems to want you to have, like, a balanced team.
Right. So the number of stat points each player has is determined at random. You roll 2d6, and whatever comes up, that's what you get. Unless you get snake eyes, then you get to
re-roll. Then you roll again, yeah.
How did you feel about that, Alex?
I also didn't like it, and that was just because there's such a wide variety of skills that could be, the vault master, or whatever you want to call it, that he could use to try and, you know, stop the heist from happening, that you have to either have so many players on your team, or you have to have people who just get decked out, like, with double sixes.
Right. And in fact, I ended up getting double as many points as Rudy had, because Rudy got screwed on the roll. But yeah, I totally agree on this. I think that it's having that element in character generation rarely seems like a good, that element of randomness in character generation never really seems like a great thing to me. You know, having the fact that two players can have vastly different performance in the game. You know, you can have one player who's basically fucked from the get-go because they rolled a 3, which is the bare minimum, and they only had 3 points to assign, while another player has 12 points and is decked out in skills. That means that one player is really going to end up getting the vast majority of the screen time, gets to solve most of the problems, gets to, you know, they're, on one hand, they're forced to carry the game, and on the other hand, they also get to steal all the scenes, and it feels very disproportionate. And I don't think that's fun for the other players.
It also, there's also a big problem, because of that discrepancy, that there really should have been a bonus, to, like, doing a good role-playing job, like maybe your reasoning behind doing your action. There should be leeway to add, like, 1 point into the roll, so that way you at least allow people to try and actually act out their roles.
Right. Now, the game does kind of give you an advantage for strategic thinking, because it lets you make roles that, it lets you roll skills that the GM didn't anticipate you rolling. Like, if he thinks you need to use acrobatics to get into the vault, but you say, well, this is why I think I can use hacking to get into the vault, and you make a convincing case, and you can use your skill instead of the one he recommended. But yeah, something that rewarded strategic thinking even more would have been nice.
The thing is, though, it also doesn't reward strategic thinking because you're penalized for doing something that's not expected.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
So, yeah, there's almost no reason, like, why you would want to be heavy into a stat. You would want to have, like, 1 point or 2 points in everything if you could.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is a reason. If you get heavy into a stat, though, then you're going to be guaranteed to make all of those rolls. So if you have a big team of people, and you have, you know, if you have, like, four different players, and each of them specializes in a different way, then that's going to work out better for you in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And it will help to mimic the way these heist movies work, you know, like the Italian Job, where you have the explosive expert, and you've got the guy who's the expert at, you know, safe cracking, and then you have the getaway driver, and you have all of these different people with different expertise.
Right.
And that brings me to something I did like about character creation, which is the fact that one player can have multiple characters.
Yeah.
Which is especially cool if you want a team that's full of, like, one-note characters who are good at one thing, like most of these heist movies have, but either A, like us, you only have a couple of players, or B, you don't want to be forced to just play that one-note character all the way through the game. So you can have some variety there, and I thought that's cool. And I wish more RPGs would let the players play multiple characters, as opposed to just saying, okay, well, anyone who the players doesn't play is an NPC, and the GM has to carry that.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good rule. I just think that that's like a common house rule people should be comfortable using anyways, having multiple characters. Like, because the system is very rules light, and, like, you don't have to worry about, like, health or, like, you know, damage per, you know, attack roll and crap like that, that it's much more flexible to have multiple characters. But that should never be, like, no, you are stuck with this one person.
Right.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, so I'm saying the rule that the guy, you know, that Greg included, it's awesome. It should be standard.
Yeah, it should be. Right. And I like the fact that he... Well, a lot of GMs will allow that as a house rule. I like the fact that he put it right there in the text. It's right there in the text, and so you don't have to, you know, debate that in the game.
Right. Yeah.
Well, what about creating the blueprint? What about that? Alex, you were GM. How did you feel about that?
It was kind of a pain in the ass, just because, when I was trying to create defenses, I didn't want to make... I had to use defenses that were kind of localized to that area, and since we chose a GameStop, there wasn't many defenses to begin with.
Right.
Well, so I kind of... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you did a good job with it. You improvised a lot of things in the spot.
So, yeah, that's what made it so difficult was locale. If you're not familiar with the location, it can make it very difficult to put out defenses because of the language used that you have to use to say this is what this is. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to use infiltration for this person and for this defense, and then if you're not sure exactly what it is, if you don't have any clarification on it, it can be very difficult to say, oh, is this worth 1 point or is this worth 2 points?
Yeah.
Is this even worth 3 points? Because you can put as many points... You can put, like, it says, like, up to 5 points for defense in the rules. And there is no way in hell I'm going to, you know, get away with doing that against you guys, because that would just be ridiculous.
Right. And since we had so few points to begin with, we would have just been destroyed.
Yeah, because I could have been the king of dicks and go, like, all right, the only way you can get through is front door.
Right.
And that is, like, lockpicking 5.
Especially since our lockpicker didn't even make it to the front door. Yeah. Well, he made it to the front door and then was promptly arrested because he rolled snake eyes.
Yeah. But, Jay, it was a little difficult, but I think that has everything to do with the mindset and, like, what was available for me to grab upon.
Yeah.
It took a lot of effort on my end to actually make it work, and the examples that were given for the defenses were meant for that Vegas style of, you know, heist versus, okay, here's a random defense that could be applicable for almost anything.
Yeah.
I would have preferred those kinds of things.
Yeah, a wider variety of examples would have been nice. And I mean, I did enjoy the fact that it was just 11 pages, because it let me read it through it quickly. But I would like if the final version had, like, scenarios in it. You know, here's a low-level scenario, like we did, like breaking into a GameStop. And here's, you know, here's a casino scenario, here's a bank scenario, here's, you know, a corporate headquarters scenario. Just so that people have more examples to build from, I think that would be great. Now, Rudy, how did you feel about Crap?
I don't know, I was kind of hesitant to be the GM in it, just because I wanted to play a character. So I think that might be kind of an obstacle for a lot of people who just want to get in and play, sort of, the fact that you have to do a blueprint and that kind of thing. But, it didn't really take that long, and basically you could do most of the prep while the people were making characters, so.
Yeah, the prep was a lot faster than I expected it to be. When I was reading through the manual, I was thinking exactly what you just said. I was like, oh, this is going to be like, the GM's going to take like half an hour or 45 minutes just trying to find, work out the blueprint. But it was very fast in actual play. It was like, okay, picked a few defenses, set up my access points, boom, ready to go.
Yep.
So it delivers on being a low prep game.
Yeah.
The prep time, though, that a lot of that had to do with I really didn't care. Like, I wasn't really invested in trying to, like, make this, like, a serious game. Because, like, if you look at, like, what I put there, I put employee, I put event duck, and I put the front door.
That's true.
That's not really that complicated of access points, and that was just because I just wanted to get through with it. I did not really want to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And my defenses, I used the crowd from like, you know, when they have, like, people stand in line for the movies, like, they sit out there, they camp there. I had that as a defense for the vault itself. So, like, because, like, that's just stupid. Like, anyone who's serious into the game would not pick that, and that would take more time to pick someone else.
That's true. Although I kind of like the approach you took more than the approach recommended in the game, because it let us flesh things out in play. The way his sample blueprint had, if you read it, it has what the obstacle is, what the defense is, what skill you need, and how many points. And then it has kind of a detailed explanation of why, you know, of those things, of why you need to use this skill on this defense and all of that.
Right.
And I like the fact that you just had the three things quickly jotted down there, like crowd, what was crowd? Improvisation, and then, or infiltration. Crowd, infiltration, and then two. And that meant that as the game evolved, you got to fill those details in. And I feel like if all that had been front-loaded, it would have taken something away from the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you like to talk about, like, some of the things that we didn't really care for?
Sure. I mean, yeah, let's do the things that bothered us first, and then we can do the things we liked about the game. Alex, why don't you start it off?
All right, well, the thing that I really didn't like was that there was some obvious details added in, while there were some things that were kind of, like, muddy, you know, in terms of, like, the thought process, where like, some things were included in that was, like, unnecessary, and some things that were necessary were left out.
You mean in like, terms of details? Yeah, give an example.
Yeah, in terms of details. Like, the things that were extra that I thought were, like, weren't necessary was when it came to character creation, and they said, and he wrote that it's a, you know, 2d6 for stats, and then he had to put in the fact that it's 7 points average for stats. I thought that was, like, that was complete, that wasn't really necessary, because, you know, you would understand, like, it doesn't even matter if you know what the average is. You're rolling 2d6, so who cares? And then parts that were left out were accessing points, because the way it's read, it makes it sound like everyone has to roll for their access point, but the way it's worded, it could mean that only one person has to get access points in, and then if the other people can, you know, role-play their scenario to make it sound like it makes sense, they can go in with them.
Yeah, that was one issue. In the access point section, it wasn't clearly laid out whether every character that wanted to use to get through the door, basically, had to make a roll, or if you could piggyback on other people's rolls, and it would be nice to see that.
Hmm. Yeah, and just something else that was might have been confusing is, like, if somebody gets captured by the police or whatever, like, does their heist thing still go off, like, the job that they were supposed to do for the heist, does that still get through, or does it get recalled, or what?
Well, you mean if they had a... if they successfully...
successfully planned for it.
Right.
Hit it in the planning stage, but then at the heist they got caught before that happened.
Right.
They got a chance to use it.
Right, because if they had succeeded in the planning roll, they wouldn't have to roll again for that defense during the heist.
Right.
Because it has already been nullified. But if they've already been arrested and they're not there...
And how do they nullify it?
Right, that's a good point. Another, while we're talking about details, one little detail that kind of, I guess, confused me was it says, if someone gets arrested, you have 15 minutes to get them out of lockup before they're carted off to jail. And what I'm wondering, is that 15 minutes real time?
Yeah.
Is that 15 minutes in-game time? Is that, and if it is in-game time, how do we track in-game time? You know, and if it's real time, that's a little, do you just have to talk really fast? You know, that's a little ambiguous, and I wish he had really more clearly explained how time functions in the game, because it's not really explained in detail. There's no real nothing mechanical backing that up, I guess.
Speaking of time, that's also a good thing to talk about for the actual heist itself, because they don't give you a time ending, like how much time you have to finish the heist. Because if there's people getting arrested, you know, you have 15 minutes to get to them. That doesn't really matter if you can spend the next 5 hours of game time, you know, rescuing them and doing the job.
That's true.
So there's no
real pressure.
Right.
Right.
In fact, some kind of time mechanic that ran throughout the whole game would make the whole thing more tense. Because one of the other things I did not really care for was it seems like a lot of your die rolls happen. A lot of the action, you know, the mechanical action happens during the prep phase, that middle phase. But honestly, the prep phase is kind of boring, because you're making a lot of rolls in order to disarm the defenses, but there's not really much meat there in terms of role-playing. There's also not really much risk involved there. You know, you're not risking anything while you're prepping. So, and the smartest strategy for this game, really, is to spend as much time as you can on prep, taking down as many defenses as you possibly can before you get in the vault and pull off the heist. But that means, from a fun perspective, that means you're spending a lot of time on the boring part of the game, the part where you basically sit around and role-play researching things, or role-play making costumes or whatever. And while there's some interesting interpersonal stuff going on there, that part of the game didn't seem too thrilling to me. Whereas the heist is when all the fun happens, but by then you've gotten most of the rolls out of the way, and so it seems like the mechanics are all front-loaded and the fun is all back-loaded.
Guys, going to the dice roll there for the planning and the heist itself, it felt like the heist was an afterthought, because the penalty for failing a heist roll is just, you're done, you're arrested, and you have to go, go get rescued. Meanwhile, in the planning phase, there's no penalty for planning.
Right.
You know, when you do a skill roll. So, I would like there to be, no instant failure for rolls for the heist. It would probably, since we're going off Ocean's 11, we're playing off puns of the titles there, and, stuff like that. Why don't we just do, he should implement, a heat meter. before you fail, the higher your heat goes. Mm. And when it gets too high, everything goes to crap.
Right. Yeah. Well, that would be a way that you could actually have some consequences during the prep phase. Because
right.
You could build up heat during the prep phase if you bungle things. And, I mean, that's just one possible suggestion. But I do feel like there has to be something there. There has to be consequences during the prep phase because it has to be a little more exciting.
Yeah.
Rudy.
I'd say I pretty much agree with most of that. The one thing, I already talked about that. So, yeah, that's pretty much, those are pretty much the only issues I had with it. It was pretty.
You were going to mention the randomness and character generation again.
Yep. But,
I have one last thing that's kind of a negative. And it was kind of like the what I was talking about before about adding details into something that really you don't really need to do that, and that was the experience and how it relates to how much money you've stolen, and the value of chips and stuff like that.
Right.
A lot of it seemed like it was adding more detail than was needed, because it also gave it diminished a lot of your possibilities for your characters. If you wanted to do, a 40-chip, adventure, a heist, mm-hmm. it says once you go above 10 chips, it requires the cost of 100 grand per chip. So that means, you're doing, a $4 million job, and the only way, they say the only way you can get it is by borrowing the money. So that can tunnel people into thinking that, they can't have a character that's already, good at their job. They have to be someone that's new at it.
Meaning already wealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I sort of agree with that. And I think that maybe having options to allow you to start off with some dollars, some money at the beginning would be cool for people who want to do a one-shot or want to start off with characters that are basically already leveled up. But I did actually, getting into what I liked, I really liked the idea of borrowing money, though, because I feel like that added some urgency to the game. You could be financing this job because you basically have a mob loan shark backing you, and if you fuck it up, he's going to come after you. And that really seemed true to the source material, too, where they've got the sleazy guy backing them, and it's like, well, damn, at least one person in the heist always has, debts, and his his loan shark is always coming after him, he's going to, fuck him up, going to break his legs or whatever, and that always adds a new sense of drama. I kind of wish that was integrated more into the game so that you had scenes with your loan shark, mechanically integrated in there, so he could show up and threaten you, and maybe you could have a conflict with him or something, because, I don't know, I just thought that added a cool sense of urgency to the game, that possibility. And it also lets you build almost a fiasco-like Ocean's campaign, where everything spirals out of control, and you end up dead in a ditch at the end,
To me, it, even though I said it was a negative, the way it was described was a negative to me, because I actually like the idea of that being an option, but it shouldn't be a requirement. That's what I'm trying to say. In order to do better stuff, it shouldn't be a requirement in order to have in order for you to be inspired to have a guy coming after you for debt. It shouldn't have to be a necessity.
Right. Yeah. I would like to see more options for character generation, period. Like, options for starting off with a character who's already wealthy, options for starting off with a character who has more skill points, options for dealing with it if you've got a smaller group or a larger group. You know, just some more fluidity in character generation. So that you can deal with the fact that different people might want different things out of the game.
Yeah, I think group size is definitely an issue, maybe. Because I don't know what the you know, desired size for a game of this is, but it seemed like we were a little bit short on skills, maybe.
Is it in the rules? I didn't see the recommended player.
Yeah, no, I didn't see it either. Okay, so has everyone gotten the bile out now? Are we done with things we didn't like?
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we also talked about things we did like, so, you know.
Yeah, well, let's talk more about things we liked. What did you really like in the game, Alex?
Honestly, there wasn't a lot I really liked about it. And that was because a lot of it, I had to throw in a lot of my effort in order to make it work. Because just by the background information, like the things that we were supposed to be inspired by it, I don't care about that. So like, and when we did our background for the heist itself, we didn't even want to do, you know, casinos and crap like that. And I don't mean crap like it's bad. I'm just saying we don't, you know, crap.
Personal taste, yeah.
Yeah. So like we had to completely change the entire perspective on how the game was supposed to be played. Just because, like, you know, it didn't seem awesome, so we had to put a lot of our thought into it.
Well, I don't feel like we traveled too far from the basic concept, though. I think we just put a little bit of spin on it. Yeah. So there was nothing about the game that you really enjoyed, you know. And I can understand you didn't really like the source material, maybe, but taking it for what it is.
For what it is, it's good that, you know, the rules light system. It's just that I really felt like it was us that made the game fun and not the actual system rules.
Okay. Rudy?
Well, one thing that I liked, that we didn't really get to was the fact that it says that after the heist is done, you have to roleplay your way out of it.
Because
I don't know, that just makes a kind of, like, it seems like the best parts of, like, dungeon crawls or, like, you know, situations like that are the improvised things where somebody says, okay, no, I do this, you know, and just to try to get out of something. And that sort of, I think that sort of plays into that a little bit.
Well, it demands that you improvise. You can't
just depend on your dice
and say, I do this.
Right, yeah. And I think there should be more of that in the game. But other than that, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
Anything else you really enjoyed?
Oh, I did like the rolling system. I thought it was pretty neat.
In what way?
Well, in that you could basically you could plot out how you were gonna, you know, how you wanted your character to be built. Like, you knew what things your character was gonna be good at going into it, and you could role play into situations that would, you know, do that. You always had a chance to show off, kind of, you know, show off your skills.
True. Yeah, that's good. It definitely. Anything else?
I did actually like the source material. I liked Ocean's 11, and I thought the idea of a heist is pretty cool. And I also think that it's cool that the game, like, kind of expanded for us when we did our kind of bizarre take on it.
Yeah. So I think, personally, I don't know, I'm not a big fan of heist films. You know, I sort of like them. But I really thought that the game really captured what those films were about.
Right.
I think if you take it as an interpretation of its source material, I think it did a pretty excellent job of that. I think it had some of the flaws of its source material, which includes the fact that all those heist movies start dragging at the midpoint while they're trying to, you know, while they're spinning their wheels around, trying to keep you watching it, waiting for the heist, which takes up the last half an hour or 45 minutes of the film. But I think it did a great job of knowing what's cool about those movies and making sure those cool bits got in the game. You know, and really understanding, you know, all the little elements of those movies, like having a team full of misfits. Well, it found a way to, a team full of misfits that each had their own, like, skill.
Right.
Well, it found a way to do that. And it found a way to do that even if you only had a couple of players.
Right.
And it found a way to get in, once again, the skeezy loan shark who's after you. And the sucking up, you know, the seducing the security guard or sucking up to them, or and all the intrigue with the other, with the employees at the place and having the inside man and scoping out the vault and all of that. It has all of the elements of a really cool heist film or a bad heist film, but it has all of those essential elements. And it has them combined in a way that I think works. You can quibble about whether or not it works perfectly, but I don't think there's any denying the fact that this game works as presented. You know, you can pick up the rules, you can read them, and then you can play the game the way the rules were written and get the game that the rules described, you
right,
know,
yeah.
Which has not been true of many of, well, not many, but of some of the games that we've play tested in the past. Even games that turned out really well, sometimes they turn out to be a completely different game than was described in the manual.
Yeah. No, this
and sometimes,
this you pretty much knew what you were getting up front, I think.
And the mechanics deliver that.
Right.
And that's cool, because there's nothing worse, I think, than getting into a game because the source material hypes you up, and the game is described in such a cool way in the manual, and then you find out that the mechanics of the game don't actually reinforce the type of play that you that the game promised. And this game doesn't do that. It delivers. What you see is exactly what you get, and I think that's cool.
Yeah.
I think maybe if I... This is not something that I usually say, because I am a big lover of games that you can pick up and play, that have a short manual, that you can play in 3 hours, and have the full experience. But I think this is a game that would actually benefit from being expanded a bit, from being, especially once again, during that middle section of the game, really adding some more mechanical weight to that, and maybe adding a time mechanic or something.
Hmm.
Feel usually with these simple, bare-bones kind of games, there's a real focus and a real urgency about them, and that's really cool. But I feel like this is a game that would actually function better as a big kind of sprawling game with more mechanical bits and pieces to it.
One of the positive things I forgot to mention was, even though I didn't like the rule system itself because of how straightforward it was, because of how straight, you know, because it was very precise, I did like that, you know, there was little interpretation that could be misread.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah. It just wasn't my cup of tea, that's all.
Which, honestly, in indie games is a wonderful thing. If you can read the manual and know exactly what you're getting, and it's not open to interpretation, that's pretty cool. One thing I really, really like, though, you have to admit, even if you didn't enjoy the first two-thirds of the game, the heist was fucking awesome. The heist itself was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I liked it a lot because the heist is where it actually mattered.
Yeah.
Right.
So we actually got, you know, the things taken care of that we wanted to, instead of having to, you know, plan out things. Because I liked the role-play aspect when we were trying to, like, you know, give reasons to chip away at the defense, but I would rather have that be the entire heist itself.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Instead of having it to be the planning phase, just put that as the heist. That's what I'm feeling.
Yeah. And the heist, I felt, escalated perfectly in the way that, urgency just kept building up. Like, oh, damn, one person got grabbed by the police. Well, we better rush in there and finish the job fast. Oh, shit. You know, someone else got grabbed, and now the police are on to us. So now I have to make 3 rolls and try to nail them to get away with this. And it just seemed like exactly what you want, because you want it to start to spin out of control a little bit. You don't want the heist to go exactly how you planned it. You want people to get arrested, and you want it to start to unravel, because that's where the action comes in, and that's when people start worrying and really start getting engaged. So I thought the heist part was pretty awesome.
I liked it a lot.
I did like the heist a lot, too.
Rudy, how are we on time?
We're about 40 minutes here.
Okay. Any final thought on Oceans before we move on to a topic?
My final thought is, this is a really well-put-together manual. As far as the layout and stuff, it's really well put together and easy to find stuff. But it's dedicated to Richard Dawkins, and fuck that guy. Seriously.
I wasn't going to bring up the dedication, but now that it's been mentioned, I don't know, it just seems kind of strange to me to have an 11-page book where half of one page is a dedication. And I don't want to nitpick the dedication, because Jesus Christ, it's the dedication.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to sit here and, nitpick
but
that shit.
I feel like the part where he dedicates it to, Creative Commons and Wikipedia and all the people who, he says, contribute to the free online distribution of ideas and content on the Internet. I thought that was great. That paragraph would have been a great dedication. It makes sense. Well, yeah, this is a free game available on the Internet. It's part of this larger culture. That makes sense. But then he dedicates it to all of these scientists and to these comedians, and it just felt like that paragraph... First of all, some people are going to read it, and the list that he has here is bound to offend at least somebody. if you're not dedicated by... If you're not offended, by Richard Dawkins, maybe you're offended by Julian Assange. I'm not. I think Julian Assange is a cool dude. But, or maybe you're offended by the fact that Bill Maher is in here. That was the one that really got me.
I didn't even notice Bill Maher was in there.
He's one of the comedians. Bill Maher is the biggest condescending cocksucker.
Yeah, he's pretty much a fuckwit.
I love, he also dedicates it to Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, who I love and follow. I watch their show. But the point is, just having like 50 names here in a dedication, people are going to find someone who they don't really, really dislike, and they're going to get,
I don't know, but maybe that's the point of it. I mean, maybe it's to generate some kind of response.
Well, that's true. I have never before, I think, given a shit about what was written in one of these dedications.
Yeah, no, neither have I, and that's one thing. Yeah.
You don't even read them. You
no.
Said that,
Yeah. Like, oh, because usually it's like, my wife and kids and,
to my mommy.
My mom or whatever. You can't really hate on that, but like...
Right.
When you start having scientists and all these other dudes in here.
Right. Alright, well, Alex, any final thoughts?
It's well done, very well in terms of the descriptions and details and such. I would like more examples, so that way it doesn't narrow the focus on how people think about the game. And other than that, I would probably like it a lot more if there was just a few small tweaks added to it in terms of having that sense of urgency actually matter, instead of having it to where the players have to enforce the urgency. Mm. Two or three little small tweaks, it would be really good.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, moving on.
Yep.
Alex, I think you had a topic.
Yeah, because I was going off the book here, because there was a common pattern that I noticed when we were, at least when I was reading it, and that was there was a lot of terminology, a lot of lingo attached to the things that you were reading, and that if you didn't really have a good understanding of them, it would, it would kind of like make it to where it was pretty much unplayable.
In this game, you think? Yeah. I think there were just a few, terminology. Like you had the floor, the interior, the target. There was a little bit of slang in there, but I feel like he really describes what each of those things are. So I don't think it would ever be unplayable just because it's so well laid out.
I mean by unplayable based on the mindset. Like, if someone reads the floor and they see the description, they might go, like, that sounds stupid. And then after a while, it won't grab them the same way because of the terminology.
Oh, you mean that using jargon in a game or using, like, atmospheric terms could be a turnoff to some people?
And that's what I wanted to talk about was, I was using it as an example, not, right. I wasn't trying to say whether or not, 100% that's correct, but right. That's just how I saw it. So, I'm not trying to be offensive about it.
No. Not that you have to worry about being offensive on Mom's Basement Podcast. But.
Well, going from last week, it was, the things that we said, well, mainly the things that I said, a lot of it wasn't, whatever I have to say, I'm not trying to be malicious about it. So let's just get that out of the way. Right. It's just it's just like the title of the header from Mom's Basement, where it's honest critiques.
Right.
And it's honest critiques about the community itself.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, Mom's Basement Podcast, if you're going to be the least professional podcast on internets, you might as well just say what you're going to say. Right. No need to sugarcoat it. No need to bullshit it.
Yeah. Okay. So, going from that, the terminology and, how that could mean, how that can affect your game itself, I think that would be something interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
Because, there's multiple games, all of them have, their own, coded words to represent what you need to think about at that moment. Mm. So go ahead.
Yeah.
Well, I know in some games the terminology is, really overbearing. As far as, and I don't really want to mention any of the games by name.
Oh, I thought you were talking about White Wolf games.
Yeah. Well, yeah, no, I'll mention White Wolf by name, because everybody knows that's shit.
Right.
And, but, no, I think a lot of indie games, the terminology kind of gets, it gets really kind of, I understand that a lot of it is to get people into the mood and to, kind of define the style of the game, I guess. But I feel a lot of times, if it's a duck, just call it a duck. Don't call it, you don't have to invent terms for everything.
Okay, man, give me an example. I know you, just give me one example.
Well, I'm trying to think. I know a lot of people have a problem with, the way Apocalypse World is written. I think, Alex, you mentioned that before.
Yeah, I didn't like how it was written.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like, if you're going to write a manual, it should be, I don't really know how to say it. It should be, a little more detached, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, not exactly academic, but
no,
it should almost read like, at least I think personally, it should read more like an encyclopedia entry,
right?
Or a piece of prose that's written to explanatory prose,
right?
That's written to explain a topic to an audience that you assume doesn't have information about this topic.
Right.
So very clear, simple, concise language. Mm. Yeah, and that's something I believe too. And when I when I sit down to write, you know, an alpha design document for my game, or, you know, a first draft of my game, or whatever, I'm going to use very different language than I would if I was writing a short story.
Right.
If I was trying to write a poem, or even if I was trying to write, like, an opinion piece. I feel like some level of detachment, like you said, from the prose, and if you're going to use terminology, if you're going to use slang, take the time to explain that in a very straightforward, simple way, as
right.
I think as I think Oceans does.
Yeah, oh no.
You know, I think if you do that, you're fine. But all of this jargon just for atmosphere, I think, is a bad thing.
Right. I know there's, like, some games where you have to, you know, say certain phrases at certain times to begin new parts of the game. And all of that just seems really kind of hokey to me and tangential to play.
Well, and artificial.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, well, why do you have to do that to get in? If you're not in the mood to play the game, and, you know, that's kind of half the battle, like G.I. Joe says, you know? I mean...
Yeah, you were going to say?
No, that's basically it, but...
Yeah. Well, so, you feel like these moments... You feel like this jargon is almost a mood destroyer, then, instead of something that creates mood.
Yeah, because, I mean, I want to put my own... When I'm trying to get into a game mentally, I want to put my own, you know, language or, you know, mood onto it. I don't really want somebody telling you, you know, with prose-like language, anyway, that this is the way the game should be. This is the type of feeling you should take into the game.
Mm.
You know, it shouldn't be written like fiction. You know, like, it shouldn't
yeah.
seem like it's trying to pull you in, or it has to grab you in the same way a fictional story does.
Because, and I totally 100% agree with you on this, and I think... I would go the extra step and say, it feels like the game is trying to manipulate you. Like the game, like the designer doesn't have total confidence in the ability of the game mechanics and the ability of the mechanics and the setting and the concept of the game to pull you in if it's described in a simple, straightforward way, that they feel like the text of the game itself should manipulate you into feeling the way that the game, wants you to feel, that they want you to feel while playing the game. And if they don't feel like the content of the game in and of itself can do that, then I think there's a problem.
Yeah, 'cause going off of that, about the whole mental manipulation thing, that's pretty much how I feel about most jargon in any book, period, where there's any type of rules, where, I think it was the Dungeon Worlds game, that's, you know, that they're beta testing or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Where there's a lot of it where whatever you are doing, it should be self-evident what you are doing in the process, but for some reason you're supposed to clarify, like, after the whole, you know, after the talk happened, of what you're actually doing.
Oh, right.
And so, like, I believe, you know, speaking of our beloved Dan Marushak, because he did a playtest of that.
Mm-hmm.
And every single time they were doing something, it sounded obvious that the guy was, you know, trying to attack him, like, you know, slash at him with a sword or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He had to specify that that's what they were doing. To me, it should be obvious, and you shouldn't have to say it, period.
Yeah.
But because they recommend you use that lingo, that, you know, that was those phrases, it kind of breaks the immersion with it, because I'm training my brain to spot those words, and when I'm in the middle of the conversation, and, you know, in the middle of the scene, and I have to hear those words, I'm immediately distracted by it, and I'm focused on the mechanics of the game versus the actual game itself.
Hmm.
So yeah, that That's my biggest problem that I have with like with most phrases that are used instead of just actual English.
Yeah.
Now I don't mind summarizing, giving important parts of the game unique names in order to make it easier to read the manual.
Mm.
Yeah. For example, just using something out of Oceans, access points. It's good that he has access points here, he explains what they are, and then he just uses the word access points throughout the text, so that you don't have to, he doesn't have to explain what an access point is every time he refers to it in the text. I mean, that's just as a simple, writing technique, that's good to have. Like in D&D, knowing that a skill is a skill and a feat is a feat, and, your base attack bonus is this. So you don't have to always say the number that you have to hit in order to, in order to damage someone, and you can just say armor class.
Right.
The
thing with what you're talking about there is those are very simple terms that can't be misguided. It can't be misconstrued.
Right.
Like, when you see access point, you see access point. But when you see something like height and width for difficulty measures,
that really screws
you up.
Yeah, I see what you mean with that.
But that's what I meant by breaking of immersion, is when you get terminology that is, like, that is more of a, it's you have to mentally know what it is. It can't just be, like, two words, like armor class, because you know exactly what that means. There's no confusion whatsoever. There may be confusion on how it's implemented, AC-18 or, FACO-20, things like that. Mm. But there's no confusion. You know what that armor is.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Finish what you were saying.
Oh, that was, I pretty much had finished what I was saying. Just that if you're going to use jargon and terminology in your game, it should be simple. It should be well-defined. The first time you use it, you need to define it clearly. And you shouldn't have a pattern in your text of using jargon as atmospheric words. Using jargon throughout your text, not necessarily because these are specific mechanics and you're using one word to highlight those mechanics, but using jargon or using difficult language or using prosaic language throughout your text as a way to communicate something about atmosphere at the expense of clarity. That should never, ever, ever fucking happen as far as I'm concerned.
I agree.
Hear, hear.
What are we at in terms of time?
We're coming up on an hour now, so.
Okay. So, anyone have any final thoughts?
Not much going on with me right now.
Yeah, not really.
I just poured my soul out for like the last 3 hours.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah, no, I can't really think of anything.
I just want to remind people, if you want an honest critique of your game, send it to us. We don't have any games to play next week.
Nope.
Or the week after that, or the week after that. This was the last game we had on reserve. So, Mom's Basement Podcast @gmail.com. No spaces, no periods, no punctuation. Send it to us, and we will play it.
Yep.
And Dan Baruschak, I know we've joked around, but honestly, man, you need to talk to Rudy. You need to talk to him. You need to be honest to him, because this silence is breaking his heart right now.
Yeah, get at me, bro.
That poor dude. He probably just thinks we're picking on him.
He probably does. Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh.
No.
All right, well then, good night, guys.
Yep.
Yeah, good night. And, yeah, Callahan, have my babies and stuff.
Yes. All right. Are we still recording?
Oh, yeah, we are.
I don't know.
All right, I'm going to stop recording now.
All right.